You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, September 23rd, 2020. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Trump to announce the name of the likely next Supreme Court justice by Saturday. You won't like it, but you knew that. Meanwhile, increasing calls for court packing. Joe Biden, either doesn't want to or won't hear them. Trump already looking to the court for election help. And the Supreme Court declines to block the sixth federal execution we have perpetrated this year. The House passes a clean continuing resolution to avert a government shutdown, and with it goes all leverage for anything. The FDA supposedly to announce tough guidelines for a potential coronavirus vaccine. You'll recall Alex Azar took over that process just days ago. So we shall see. Meanwhile, Democrats to investigate the Pentagon diversion of coronavirus funds, $1 billion earmarked for things like personal protection equipment, ended up helping build jets. College openings fueled 3,000 COVID cases a day. Arizona and Florida are very close, according to the polls. And Texas seems like it might be, too. The Senate's Hunter Biden fishing report fizzles. And 30 Democrats call for an Organization of American States review following their call on the right-wing coup in Bolivia. Federal court rules for transgender rights in schools. And Louisville on lockdown. Announcement of charges or lack thereof in the Breonna Taylor case expected this afternoon. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for joining us. It is Wednesday. That is the day known as the hump day, apparently. That's what the kids call it, I guess. We're halfway through the week. I'm a little tired. I took a cat to a vet last night at midnight. That's the way I like to party. So, but good news, the cat seems to be okay, at least for the time being, but was very lethargic. And you got to be a little concerned about that when you got your cat has diabetes. We are now 5 weeks away from the more or less, maybe 6 weeks as of yesterday, 5.5 weeks away from the election, or at least the day when in-person voting stops. In many states across the country, you can vote right now. And certainly, there's every reason to believe that we will not have results as to who won the election on what we have traditionally called Election Day. I guess it is Election Day. It's just not Results Day. However, the Trump administration, and one of the reasons is, in Wisconsin, they have extended the deadline for absentee ballots to come in. In Pennsylvania, they have extended the deadline for absentee ballots or mail-in ballots to come in. And in some places, it takes a long time for the ballots to be counted. But certainly, if you have valid ballots coming in as late as 3 days, 6 days after what we call Election Day, you certainly won't have results in those states. And those are very key states. The Trump administration, with the absence of Ginsburg on the court, has already headed to the court with the hopes of overturning the Pennsylvania state Supreme Court's ruling to extend the time where they will get, where they will receive absentee ballots. So it's conceivable. I don't know that we would see the difference, Ginsburg's absence in this case, because theoretically, if one of the conservative justices sided with that side, it would be, I guess, well, it would have been, in the case of if Ginsburg was alive, that would have been 5-4 in favor of allowing the Pennsylvania state court, Pennsylvania for maintaining that extension on the ballots. Now it's conceivable it may go the other way. We shall see. In the meantime, Donald Trump is out there holding rallies across the country. He was was this in Moon Township, Pennsylvania, or he wasn't in Minnesota doing this?
This was Moon Township, Pennsylvania. You know it, Sam?
I'm not aware of it.
He started it in Bemidji, but he kept the Ilhan stuff in.
That's right. I guess he found that when he was in Minneapolis, the Ilhan Omar stuff was playing well, so he kept it in his set list, essentially. They used to say, I don't know if they still say this about Pennsylvania, but I suspect they might, that somewhere between, like, they say Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, it's like Alabama. I don't know what they mean by that. But that's the saying I've heard in the past. Maybe that's why he decided to do this here. I don't know if Moon Township is actually in between those two places, but I suspect. Here's Donald Trump asking how a duly elected congresswoman is running our country. No sound. Let's try that one more time, folks. Bear with us, please.
We're going to win the state of Minnesota because of her, they say. She's telling us how to run our country. How did you do where you came from? How is your country doing? They're going to tell. She's going to tell us. She's telling us how to run our country. And you know what?
She's telling us how to run our country. Well, it's also her country. FYI. She was 8 years old when she came here as a refugee. She obviously had no part in running her country. She was escaping a civil war, but she's a naturalized citizen of this country. He's starting up again. I mean, at one point, one would imagine he's going to start to roll back in on Kaepernick, right? This is the strategy that he's pursuing to keep it close. And then there are reports that, in terms of Pennsylvania, for instance, that at least Republican lawmakers in Pennsylvania are starting to discuss they won't go too public with it, but they are discussing the issues surrounding selecting their own electors. We think we mentioned that last week. What was that? It was some time ago, I guess, with Alex Perrine. Was it with Perrine? When we were talking about the potential ways in which this election is decided by something other than the votes that are cast, not just from the perspective of the Electoral College, but in terms of who actually gets to pick the electors from specific states. theoretically, a Republican-controlled state house could appoint electors that are different than the ones that were actually elected by the people of their state. We will be talking about that more as we get closer to the election. But in the meantime, if voting is taking place where you live, you should engage in it as soon as possible. That would be a good thing to do. Meanwhile, today's sponsor is BetterHelp Online Counseling. They're giving the Majority Report audience 10% off their first month when they go to betterhelp.com/majority report. BetterHelp gives you access to your own fully licensed and accredited therapist via phone, chat, or video. As you know, a lot of therapists, particularly these days, have long wait lists. It can take weeks. It can take you months before you can see them. Then what do you do if you don't like them? I mean, if it doesn't work? Well, with BetterHelp, when you sign up, they match you with a therapist based on your specific needs within 24 hours. And you'll be communicating with them within 24 hours. Obviously, this is a very stressful period of time in just about everybody's lives. I don't know. Occasionally you hear somebody who's like, well, I'm making bread and I'm really excited to be in a bunker or something. I'm making bread and doing yoga. But except for those people, it's a pretty stressful time. And the best way in this instance, when you're dealing with a communicable disease, is to connect remotely. And BetterHelp is designed to do that. And like I said, once BetterHelp connects you with a therapist, if you don't think it's a good fit, you can switch to a new one at any time for any reason for no additional charge. They have thousands of licensed therapists. They're from all over the country. They specialize in a myriad of specialties, I guess, involving therapy that may not be available in your area, may not be difficult, I would imagine, to track down, not with BetterHelp. Also tends to be more affordable than therapists that you'd find through traditional means. You don't have to have insurance to use BetterHelp, and they have a financial aid option for those who qualify. BetterHelp is giving everyone in our audience 10% off your first month when you go to betterhelp.com/majority report. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/majority report. We will put a link to betterhelp.com/majority report in our podcast description and our YouTube description and all our video descriptions. And we will put the HTTPS in it so you can just click on it. So enjoy that. Meanwhile, let's get back to the issue at hand. I'll just give you a sense of what's going on with the right in terms of how excited they are at the prospect of, I mean, it's an interesting choice. I think from Mitch McConnell's perspective, and we should say the continuing resolution passed today. And there's two issues with it being a clean continuing resolution that passed in the House. It is the only must-passed bill, as far as I know, between now and the election. I think the debt ceiling was in a deal, I think from last year, if I recall correctly, will not come up again until, of course, Joe Biden is president, if we're lucky, or Donald Trump is president sometime next year. So there are no other must-pass bills. Holding up that bill would not have ultimately prevented Mitch McConnell from holding hearings, Senate hearings. But it could have signaled, and we'll talk more about this later, it could have signaled to the country, like, hey, this is a real problem, and the Democrats are doing everything they can to fight it. But there's actually something that's a little bit more material, and I will talk about that in a bit as well, about the Affordable Care Act, that this continuing resolution could have basically taken the threat to the Affordable Care Act off the table. More on that a moment. But I think Mitch McConnell's calculation is he wants this Supreme Court justice sat. And he is less concerned about its impact on the election than its impact on his legacy. Donald Trump has sat now 201 federal judges, I believe it is, for lifetime appointments. He's done 55 appellate judges. Obama had 53 in 8 years. And Mitch McConnell sees that as his accomplishment, and it is. It is. It's a wretched one, but it is an accomplishment. And it seems to me that you would get more from an electoral perspective if you created an if-come situation, right? If you vote for us, you will get this. But I think the strategy also seems to be about one, for Mitch McConnell to get his legacy, and two, to hope to drive a certain amount of aggrievement by the conservatives, because that seems to be their animating principle. Nevertheless, here's Rush Limbaugh excited about the prospect of a new ultra-conservative Supreme Court justice.
Washington Post has a story today. Democrats largely powerless to stop the GOP from confirming their court choice. Folks, do you know how big this is? This is huge. This could be, I want to whisper this, the end of Roe versus Wade, but this is going to have a massive impact on the American judiciary. It's thus going to have a massive impact on American culture and society. And the desire that many of us have to return to American traditions and institutions that were part of our founding, that led to our greatness and our exceptionalism, are now going to be the vast majority of opinions on the United States Supreme Court. I'm
not sure I even know exactly what he's talking about there. If he's talking about like the making abortion illegal fulfills all those things, or if he's talking about an assault on, let's say, the ability of gay people to marry, maybe. I mean, is he talking about like the Lochner era? Are a lot of people really excited at the prospect of federal agencies being unable to actually do their job because they are basically defanged by a Supreme Court? What do you guys think he's talking about there? Miscegenation?
Yeah, I think it all goes back to miscegenation.
Well, honestly, though, they must be talking about abortion and anti-gay marriage. I mean, he doesn't, or maybe just like, I don't know. I mean, what other things get so cultural? Transgender rights, maybe?
Culture and society. So, you know, I mean, it's the whole thing. I don't know.
I don't know either what he's talking about, but he's very excited. And to a certain extent, it's going to implicate every part of our lives. I don't know that it's going to be cultural as much as it's going to be economic. Some instances, I guess you could say it's cultural, but it's really going to be about rights. It's going to be about voting rights. It's going to be about civil rights. It's going to be about economic rights. I guess maybe we're going back to an era that is like, children will be able to work again full time. We'll get that back. That was one of the things that made this country great. You can put a 12-year-old in a sweatshop for 70 hours a week. Maybe we can get some of that back. And this whole thing where you got to get time and a half, we'll get rid of that. Get back to that, those early values where exploiting child labor and all labor is far more celebrated than it is today, I guess.
Make sure we're still able to exploit labor in
masked
ways.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it must be like once you hit a certain threshold of being able to exploit labor, that's when you start getting back to our original values. Like, I don't know, slavery?
That's what I was thinking.
Not talking about reinstituting slavery, is he? There are some people who it's going to be a little bit embarrassing. I mean, look, Mitch McConnell obviously is going to feel no shame about this. Lindsey Graham, who will be sitting on the judiciary, chairing the Judiciary Committee, he has his whole story, right? It's Brett Kavanaugh. Because of the way that Brett Kavanaugh was treated, that's why we should completely reverse our position from 2016. It's going to be a little bit uncomfortable if, and right now, Donald Trump has a list of something like, I don't know, 45 people. Most recently came out with a new 20-name list of potential Supreme Court picks. I think every single one of them is a Federalist Society member, which would make sense. There are two you're hearing the most about. One is Amy Coney Barrett. She's in the Seventh Circuit. She is extremely conservative. She belongs to a, and this has become an issue, and this was an issue, I guess, Dianne Feinstein brought up when Coney Barrett was being, was nominated to the appellate court. She belongs to an interesting, I guess, covenant, or I don't know what you call it.
Ecumenical organization, I think you would call it.
An ecumenical organization? That's a very ecumenical way of saying that.
Is that like a secret society?
Well, I mean, sort of. It is the group called the People of Praise. This is a New York Times report. She is a member of a group called People of Praise. The group members, quote, swear a lifelong oath of loyalty to one another and are assigned and accountable to a personal advisor. It's sort of like what we got going here on the show. Moreover, the Times added, the group teaches, this is a quote, that husbands are the heads of their wives and should take authority for their family. That's
the husband is going to be on the Supreme Court too.
So well, yeah,
or the husband says, you are to sit on the Supreme Court. You're going to be a judge. The newspaper quoted legal experts who worried that such oaths could raise legitimate questions about a judicial nominee's independence and impartiality.
Yeah, I think generally secret allegiances have difficulty being compatible with democracy. But
the website describes the group as an ecumenical, charismatic, covenant community. I mean, there's a covenant between each other. We're going to do X, Y, or Z, modeled on the first Christian community. Freedom of conscience, the website says, is the key to our diversity.
Did Pete Buttigieg write this copy?
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, when he's working for McKinsey.
But this is she is in the pole position, as it were. There's a second judge that we're hearing quite a bit about, Barbara Lagoa. She is a child of, I think, Cuban immigrants. And she is equally conservative in many respects, perhaps not quite as religious, but it's unclear. I don't, maybe of a different sort of ilk, as it were. But in terms of intensity of religion, I don't know that she belongs to a covenant of where she swears a lifetime oath to other people. But she has a 14-year tenure as a state and federal judge. She has some interesting ideas on executive power and particularly voting rights. Lagoa, both sat on the Amendment 4, I think it was, case in state court and in federal court. And that is a referendum that was passed by the voters of Florida saying that felons who have served their time can have their voting rights restored. And there was an attempt by the legislature after the people of Florida made that decision to unwind it by saying that many of those thousands of felons have fees and fines, mostly fees, that they owe the courts, and that they cannot vote until they pay those fees. And if that sounds like a price to vote, like a poll tax, the reason is because it's sort of like a poll tax. Not only did people expect Lagoa to recuse herself when she was on the federal bench hearing this case, they also was sort of put off by the fact that she seems to have no problem with poll taxes, which is reminiscent. She has no problem with poll taxes if they coincidentally disenfranchise people, which is sort of reminiscent of what they tried to do with the 13th Amendment, and which they did do with the 13th Amendment for that matter, which was to say, like, well, you can't have a law saying you can't vote if you're black, but you can have, and that's basic and ending it there. But the idea that you can pass laws that you know will prevent a lot of black people from voting, yeah, you get some wiggle room there. So later we passed the 24th Amendment, which said no poll tax. But she interprets that as saying, well, you can't specifically charge people to vote, but you can charge them for things that they need to do to put themselves in a position to vote, like register to vote. So those give you like a little bit of a taste of who these folks are. And it is likely one of them will be the Supreme Court justice. Donald Trump wants to appoint a woman, and I think the right would like a woman who oversees at least and provides maybe the fifth vote to, if not overturn Roe v. Wade in its entirety, but to eviscerate it in such a way that we end up with abortion illegal. It's effectively banned in probably about a half a dozen states in the country in terms of people's access and the existence and the ability to have an abortion clinic. But it will explicitly ban abortion ultimately in like 24 states, I think, at this point, depending on what the future of those states are in terms of the legislatures, which is another reason why you should be going out and working for state reps and local lawmakers, get them elected. But it is likely it'll be one of these two. If it is Amy Coney Barrett who ends up winning the nomination, like I say, she is a judge on the Chicago-based Seventh Circuit of Appeals, and she was put there a couple years ago. Barrett is the one who is part of the people's family. What is it again?
People of Praise.
Yeah, the People of Praise. That's the covenant community. This is what she said back in 2016 as to why it was inappropriate for Barack Obama to appoint a Supreme Court justice during a presidential election year. And it's interesting. Her comments are a little bit different. Like, you know, everybody on the right is trying to figure out what's going to be their alibi as to how come they've changed their mind. Lindsey Graham pretends that it was the Kavanaugh hearing, even though he reiterated his pledge to not have an election, a nomination or a confirmation in an election year, she's going to have a little bit of a trickier time if she has to go in front of the Senate Judiciary and explain this comment, I think.
Kennedy, you know, the arguments will be that that situation was distinguishable. The nomination, the vacancy did not arise in the presidential election year. It arose the year before in June when Justice Powell retired. And Justice Kennedy was nominated in November of the prior year. Moreover, he was nominated after Bork's nomination had failed and Ginsburg withdrew his nomination. So the wrangling for the spot, the conversation about the spot, the existence of the spot, had been in play for a long time before that. Moreover, Kennedy is a moderate Republican, and he replaced a moderate Republican, Powell. We're talking about Justice Scalia, you know, the staunchest conservative on the court, and we're talking about him being replaced by someone who could dramatically flip the balance of power on the court. It's not a lateral move.
Well, they were nodding at that. Now, I believe Amy Coney Barrett represents a dramatic flip in the balance of power. And we may even see it in the context of the Affordable Care Act or in Roe v. Wade. I wonder how she's going to answer that question if she is the nominee. When someone says, hey, it wasn't just about timing, which you said, now maybe you got to, you know. But it also was about the nature of the replacement. Are you suggesting that you are not ideologically, diametrically opposed to where Ruth Bader Ginsburg was? I mean, I'm sure they had some crossover, the Venn diagram. But, you know, I mean, if you can make that argument about Scalia, how could you not make that argument about Ginsburg? So that should be interesting to see how that works out. But, and by interesting, I mean still, you know, sort of frustrating and it's just going to be interesting to see what she says if she ends up being the nominee. Lagoa is being pushed because Donald Trump needs to win Florida. And there is a sense that if he appoints Lagoa, that will help him in Florida. We shall see. I imagine now, because that's been set up, if he doesn't, maybe it hurts him in Florida. Right? I mean, is there anything worse than having unmet expectations?
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think there's anything to the possibility of Democrats in committee just not even legitimizing this nominee and not sitting in on a confirmation hearing that happens next month, so to say?
I don't know. I would guess no. I mean, I think it's a legitimate move, but I think they have firmly decided, it seems, and you can see this with Joe Biden, and you can see it with all the plan is, and I mean, I guess I can understand the logic here. I think it's a huge missed opportunity. I think it's a classic mistake that the Democratic establishment is making, which is people don't like to see any conflict and there's no value in it. So what we're going to do is just really quietly be upset. And Joe Biden is not going to. I mean, I do think that there is very little chance that a threat of court packing will do anything. I think I would put that at around 0%. So I can understand why Biden's not necessarily embracing that. Keep your powder dry. It probably can only hurt him in the context of the election. I don't think that there are some low information voters who are sitting on the sidelines who are looking for something that's going to inspire them to vote for Joe Biden, and him saying court packing is the thing that's going to do it. Right. I mean, I think if he said you're going to have health care and it's going to be free, that might do it. If he was to say like federal $15 minimum wage, that might do it. But I just don't think that a voter who is not terribly inclined to vote is sitting there going like, what we really need to do is curb the authority, the jurisdiction of the courts and court pack simultaneously. I just don't think that's happening.
Right.
So I don't see any value there. But I do see value in the Democrats putting up a bigger fight than they have. There's two issues here that I think, you know, we had a missed opportunity in the passing of this continuing resolution. Nancy Pelosi said it was only the exuberant left that wanted Nancy Pelosi to hold off on the continuing resolution as a leverage point. That may be the case. There's other parts of the left that want to save the Affordable Care Act. And there was an opportunity for Nancy Pelosi to have done that with the continuing resolution, and she didn't do it. And I think there was a sense that that there would be a little bit more time before they passed that continuing resolution. I think they pushed that through quickly because they didn't want the Democrats to sort of like glom onto this idea. Right now, as you know, there was a case out of Texas that challenged the individual mandate as being unconstitutional. And it was done so on the grounds that it was originally considered a tax by the Supreme Court, and that's why it was found to be constitutional. The Congress, when it was controlled by the Republicans, got rid of the penalty, essentially the tax associated with the individual mandate. So it was a taxless tax, which Texas and some other states claimed was unconstitutional. A district judge, who was literally a former Republican staffer, deemed it unconstitutional, said the whole law is unconstitutional. That went up to a appellate court. They found that it is unconstitutional, but they sent it back down to the district judge to find out if that unconstitutional provision would sink the entire Affordable Care Act or whether it was severable. Can you take this one part of a law and say this part is unconstitutional, but the rest of the law is fine? Now, that's a fairly obvious finding because Congress made that determination. Congress said that the entire law is not reliant on the mandate. And they did so by making the mandate zero. The penalty zero. So there was no mandate. Congress, in their action, they did not repeal the Affordable Care Act. They only repealed the mandate. And so they basically said they repealed the mandate effectively by saying that there is no penalty in not adhering to the mandate. So, and nobody took this case seriously, but it did go up to the Supreme Court because when you have a circuit court that determines that something is unconstitutional, that the Supreme Court has said is constitutional, that ends up, those are the cases that they take. The assumption was that John Roberts was going to rule with the four left of center justices and say, maybe there's no even standing. Like, who is harmed by a mandate where there's no penalty for the mandate? Like, how do you go and make an argument in a court of law that you have standing, that you've been harmed in some way by this? If you don't, you literally don't have to pay. So people thought maybe it would be punted for standing or just general ridiculousness. But now there is not four left of center justices. There are three, and there are five left of, or I should say right, far right of center justices. Even if Roberts was to side with the three left of center justices, it would then go down to the appellate court, that would hold that it was unconstitutional, and they would wait still on this former Republican staffer slash district judge to inform them whether he found it severable. And then it would work its way back up the Supreme Court, but very easily could perceive this all as and assume this all would end in the ACA being trashed. Nancy Pelosi could have saved us all the trouble by including in the continuing resolution like a one-line amendment that would have basically rid us or done a full repeal of the individual mandate, right? It exists still, but it has a penalty of $0, which is not really a mandate, but the shell of it's there. They could have done a one line that said, we repeal the individual mandate. It's part of the Affordable Care Act, the end. And the Republicans, the idea that they would have shut down the government, in other words, not passed that bill that passed the House, that they wouldn't pass it in the Senate because of that one line is obviously ridiculous. You're not going to have Mitch McConnell saying we're going to shut down the government because they're getting rid of the individual mandate. No. However, had Pelosi put that in there and the Senate had passed it and the president had signed it, the individual mandate would be repealed. Then the entire case is moot because it doesn't exist anymore. She didn't do it. I don't know why. I don't know why. It's perhaps the threat to the Affordable Care Act is will drive voters out. We now know that COVID could probably be considered a pre-existing condition. I would be surprised if it wasn't. We know there are long-term implications for a lot of people with this. And to the extent that we don't know, insurance companies, they have the ability to reinstitute discriminating against people with pre-existing conditions. They'll take that opportunity. So maybe it was just let the Republicans own it. We shall see. Missed opportunity, one would think. There are many things that the Democrats could be doing, unlikely to stop the hearings and the confirmation of a Supreme Court justice, but with the great possibility of indicating to the American public that there's a problem here.
That's the thing that I feel like they always miss doing, is I don't think they signify to people what the actual stakes are.
Absolutely. They do not believe in the value of losing a fight. They do not believe in the value of showing the American public, not just that they are willing to fight on their behalf, even if it means almost certain defeat. They also don't understand the value of communicating the stakes to people. Right? I mean, isn't it like the whole William Wallace thing, right? Where, you know, he dies and yells freedom at the end. That ultimately, like, that becomes the watchword for everybody who fought on after him. I mean, if the Democrats were to engage in the fight, they are so afraid of coming off as caring about politics and how people are impacted by these things to the rest of the population who barely tune in, except for, like, you know, the week and a half after the week and a half leading up to the polls. They are so afraid of coming off as being fighters that they miss the entire opportunity to communicate to people what the stakes are here. I mean, that's just the bottom line. Jeff Hauser has a great piece in the New Republic. He's from the Revolving Door Project. And he wrote it, I guess he wrote it yesterday, what a defiant Democratic Party looks like. He readily admits that it's unlikely you're going to be able to stop this, but you could slow it, the process down. You could drag it out. You can't do, you know, Mr. Smith goes to Washington, you know, whatever it is, some long talking filibuster. It's a 3-day, I think, window on debate. But he talks about you could object to unanimous consent in the Senate and force the Republicans, all of them, to show up with a 51-vote quorum to conduct any business. That would slow operations down. Plus, anybody know how many incumbents Republicans have versus Democrats? It's like two times as many that are running for re-election. It would be pretty nice to have those people off the campaign trail when they need to be out there as much as they can. You could also start to send up impeachment from the House. You could impeach Bill Barr, make the Senate deal with that. Mitch McConnell will get it out of the Senate. We may not even have hearings, right? They could just vote on it. No. But then you do Louis DeJoy, says Hauser. And you, Alex Azar, anybody happy with the way the coronavirus response? Something like 65, 70% of the American public think it's problematic. You just keep throwing these up there. I don't think there's a huge contingency out there going like, Democrats are just not letting the Republicans have normal Senate procedure in these days. They're being really cumbersome. You could have the House Foreign Affairs Committee passing war powers resolutions for the dozen or so conflicts for which there is no congressional authorization that we're involved in. That is also, and the reason why you would do that and the reason why you do impeachment is both of those are privileged, which means that the Senate has to dispense of them before they move on. Now, none of this is likely to prevent the seating of this justice before or certainly after the election. But again, it is a way to communicate to the American public, this is bad what they're doing, and we're doing something extraordinary to prevent them from doing it. And if you don't communicate that by action, how can you justify it by lip service? It just doesn't work.
Imagine if William Wallace yelled, be careful about the optics before he died.
Exactly. Like, I don't want to yell. I don't want to hurt anybody's ears. So geez, I'm just going to whisper. I'm going to think it. I'm not going to yell it out. I mean, I hate the glorification of that movie and that guy. And there are people who are talking about packing the court, though. The most notable that really shocked me was Russ Feingold. He was interviewed by John Nichols in The Nation, and he is taking it very seriously. And this guy was the biggest institutionalist, I think, when it came to these things in the Senate when he sat there. He would almost automatically vote for a nominee for the president of the United States based upon the grounds that they have a right to their nominee, but he is now talking about packing the Supreme Court. I was shocked by that. I was really shocked by that. Here is Donald Trump talking about how important it's going to be to add a ninth justice before the election. This is him talking on the White House lawn yesterday.
Oh, I don't think so. We need nine justices. You need that.
with the unsolicited millions of ballots that they're sending. It's a scam. It's a hoax. Everybody knows that. And the Democrats know it better than anybody else. So you're going to need 9 justices up there. I think it's going to be very important because what they're doing is a hoax with the ballots. They're sending out tens of millions of ballots, unsolicited, not where they're being asked, but unsolicited. And that's a hoax. And you're going to need to have 9 justices. So doing it before the election would be a very good thing because you're going to probably see it. Because what they're doing is trying to sow confusion and everything else. And, you know, when they talk about Russia, China, and all these others, they will be able to do something here because paper ballots are very simple. Whether they counterfeit them, forge them, do whatever you want. It's a very.
So he's asked, people think it's very contentious that you would appoint a Supreme Court justice with, I don't know, 35 days before an election. 40 days before an election. Oh, well, we need 9 justices because I need somebody to establish that the Democrats are cheating if I lose.
They might need to decide an election.
We need them there to decide an election. And I don't want this to be close. I'm a little bit worried about John Roberts. So we need 9. Right? I mean, theoretically, it's 5-3 right now. I think he feels like he cannot count on Roberts. So he wants one more justice there. And so you know what's on his mind as to why this is so crucial. And I think Mitch McConnell's perspective, he will go down in history as having fundamentally altered for generations the trajectory of American law in this country and perhaps successfully prevented things like a Green New Deal, things like Medicare for All, things like tenant rights, things like functioning regulatory state. I mean, honestly, we could spend all day because they're going to have decades to work on this project. And it's all going to go in one direction. This is not going to be one of those things like the pendulum swings back and forth. The pendulum is going to swing to the right, and then it's going to get unhinged from the part that makes it, that's at the top. And it's just going to go whoop, and then just slide off the screen, essentially. That is the prospect we are facing. How to resolve that if Joe Biden wins is a question for then. I mean, I think it's good. There are people out there, guys like Ross Feingold, who are saying we need to pack the court. But I don't think saying it now by Joe Biden is going to change anybody's vote in the Republican caucus. I mean, that's obvious, it seems to me. And I think you do that if he wins. You start to talk about it, and then you do it. But people do need to know the stakes so that there is a predicate for doing something like that.
Don't you think that there are Democrats that should be out there basically saying every day that Trump is, I mean, even more so than they are now, saying that he is telegraphing, that he is sending the results of this election in states that might be close to the Supreme Court? I mean, not to be alarmist, but he's saying it in that video.
Yes. Yeah, they should be. I mean, I think a lot of them are. I think it's just, you know, and I think as we get closer, we're going to hear more of it. But again, you know, some of this stuff is like, you know, the table is set and then people come and sit down at the table an hour later and the table is set. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think that we should be hearing a lot more about this. And the problem is that the best way to do that is to do stuff like we're going to shut down the government. Why are you shutting down the government? Because Donald Trump is out there talking about how he wants 9 people on the Supreme Court because he's convinced that they're going to be able to overturn an election. There's when you don't do anything, when you don't fight, you can't even communicate the stakes. You get no political benefit out of it. But the entire strategy by the Democratic leadership is to pretend that they don't, and they being the Democratic candidates, don't exist. And it's not just like, you know, and it means that Congress can't do anything against the president. Joe Biden can't do anything. And by do anything, I mean like actually something involving policy, as opposed to he's a jerk, or, you know, I mean, he is a jerk and you should say that, but you should say it in the context of he's a jerk and he's done this, which is a jerky thing to do. And so we're going to do this, and we've got a, you know, a 1 in a million shot of winning, but it's that important to the American public that we take that 1 in a million shot and we give it, you know, everything that we have. I mean, that's like, it's every movie that you've ever seen, right? I mean, that is like, it's, that is how you create the, how you indicate the stakes to people. And if people don't feel their stakes, they're not going to come out and vote in the numbers they you need. Now, they very well, and this is the bet they're making, that everybody knows the stakes involved with Donald Trump. And for the people who don't know the stakes involved in it, we're not going to be able to convince them of the stakes of it. We just have to hope that they are just mildly sick of this, and then we'll vote for Joe Biden. I mean, that's the theory that they're operating under. It may work. There may be enough people who are worried about Trump and that they'll come out, or maybe there's not. You got 40 days, folks. I don't know, 45 days. I can't count it out. You can count it out. It's November 3rd, isn't it? You guys all have calendars, don't you? We're going to take a quick break, head into the fun half of the program. We will take your phone calls. We will take your IMs. We will play some clips. First, allow me to remind you that this program relies on your support. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, you support the free show. And you get some bonus material in the form of the fun half, which is actually really, it's really more like a six quarters situation. It's more than half of the show. So huge value. JustCoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code majority, get 10% off. Also, listen to the AM Quickie. We did some stories in the AM Quickie today that I didn't get to today. Stuff on the UN, right? Right, Brendan? What else did we do in there? I can't remember, but you should check it out. AMQuickie.com. You will get, we do three, you know, sort of, and this is all within 6 or 7 minutes. So we do three major stories and then about four smaller ones. So you will really get a good idea of a range of stuff that's happening out there. AMQuickie.com, or you just look for AM Quickie on your podcast servers and whatnot. Don't forget, check out the Noma Key Show. You can find the Noma Key Show on youtube.com/the Noma Key Show. And you can also, she starts today at 3 p.m. Always has great guests. Also, don't forget the Antifada. Find that at patreon.com/the Antifada. Matt, what did you guys do on TMBS last night?
We had University of Utah economics professor Marshall Steinbaum on last night to talk about the California Assembly Bill 5, which is about sort of employment status and has particular relevance to the gig economy. And we talked about a proposal by Harvard Law called sectoral bargaining, and why their version of sectoral bargaining might not be what labor needs. And so kind of a wonky discussion. We also had Jeremy Johnson on to talk about integral theory in the left. He talked with Leisha about that. So check that out, folks. Patreon.com/TMBS and the Michael Brooks Show YouTube channel.
All right, folks. see you in the fun half.
You are in for it.
All right, folks, 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
Are you ready?
Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back. Back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back. Back.
Just as delicious as you could imagine.
The alpha males are back. Back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back. Back, back, back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back. Back.
I take all of it in my throat.
Alpha males are back. Back. Back, back.
Almost says what?
The alpha males are back, 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 back.
You are a madman!
And the alpha males are back, back, back.
I am a total cunt.
Can we bring back DJ Danarchy's song, please?
Yeah, or a couple of them. Just put them in rotation.
DJ Danarchy.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough of a break.
That's fucking nonsense.
Hey, folks! Fucking reminder!
Have Parkinson's.
And the alpha males are
psych. Fuck them. Fuck them.
Almost says what?
What?
Almost says what?
A hell of a lot of bang. A hell of a lot of bang. A hell of a lot of bang. Hell of a lot of bang. Hell of a lot of bang.
All lives matter. Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black. Black, 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 black African. And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black.
See Donald Trump out there? Doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keep it at 100.
Can't knock the hustle.
Come on!
Fuck them. Fuck them. Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday!
My birthday!
Happy birthday to me, Jew boy.
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black. Alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black.
Come on.
What?
Come on.
What?
Come on. Someone needs to pay the price for blasphemy around here.
I am a total
pussy. Pussy, 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 pussy.